What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
Everyone kept saying this was like, yeah, I've looked on a bunch of lists. Everyone said this was a spooky movie, a horror movie, and I don't know if I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing is, especially like when it came out in the 90s, I feel like people were like, oh, there's like there's voodoo and like,
right,
you know,
this movie is, it's not a, it's like the horror genre is like a very specific thing, feels like. This movie is definitely unnerving in a lot of ways.
Yes, for sure.
It's not creepy, but it's like unsettling. It's like, oh, like this is not, you're like, oh my god. And yeah, it's definitely eerie. A horror story for some of the women who are in it, like the characters, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure.
But it's not like there's no jump scares. There's no, you know, you're not sitting on the edge of your seat. It's not that kind of scary movie. So yeah, it's interesting. It was on a couple of lists, but and we have had people recommend this to us, but I'm glad we're doing it.
Same.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think we should give maybe just give that warning now that there's like, you know, maybe a slight
sensitive
trigger warning.
Topics.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely sensitive topics in this movie.
But have you guys been to New Orleans? Because like it's such a like lively city, and there is this kind of like voodoo stuff there, and they have, you know, and it's like you know, like with tourism it becomes like a thing of like, oh, like that's fun, but I don't know, man, there's something about voodoo and like
I've never been, but I've always wanted to go. But just recently, I think I was telling James a long time ago, but like I started researching like voodoo and religions that are unique to like BIPOC cultures, if you will. And like researching voodoo, like I grew up, you know, hearing about voodoo dolls and stuff like that and thinking of them like, you know, sacrificing stuff. But then actually reading it, it's so not that. You know what I'm saying? They still believe in like a God. They still believe in God and stuff like that. It's a thing that got bastardized by white Europeans. And it's so funny because I'm like, I grew up fearful of it. Like straight up, like, you know, the spirits are coming back, you know, like even Princess and the Frog, like the main bad guy was a voodoo dude and he had like spirits dancing on the walls and shit.
yes.
And so I don't know. It's just very fascinating hearing. But even this movie, I think, respects it in a way where it's like, you know, because we're taught what it actually is wrong, which makes sense because we're learning about American history and how much that's been tweaked. But it's just fascinating that like this religion that still believes in God, people probably don't even know that they do. You know what I mean? They don't know that they don't worship devils and stuff like that and spirits. It's just like a very fascinating. I'm very intrigued by voodoo, if that makes sense. But never been to New Orleans. Want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been either.
Yeah. Would you ever get a voodoo doll?
I don't like dolls because dolls freak me out. So I would never get a doll, but I would. The thing is, I don't know. I was, God.
Oh my God. You just reminded me that my aunt, Annie, she's passed away, but she had a like glass case full of dolls in her.
Wow.
In one of her rooms. Like just a bunch of dolls. Like you would walk in the room and there's just like a bunch of dolls in this glass case.
No.
No, so. But I, as a kid, not knowing anything about it, like knowing the bastardized version of voodoo, did think that like something like that would be cool to have. Like I did, like I do remember really thinking like, wow, if I had the ability to just, because I wasn't you have all seen me. I'm a very thin dude and like, I had a lot of enemies, okay? And I...
What are you, a rapper?
Had a lot yes, of I enemies. Was a rapper. And I always thought that like, yeah, since I can't fight back, if I just had something that I could just like, all I have to do is just, you know, like in Tales from the Hood, when he just rips up his stepdad like and yes. crumbles him. Like yes. I would have, if I could, something like that, if I had that ability, I as a kid, I always thought that'd be cool.
Man, I always wanted to go. The trip I want to take my parents on, they've always wanted to go to New Orleans. And once I get some money, that is my goal, is to like I would have to drive them, but drive them yeah. over to New Orleans and like
that would be fun.
Yeah, man. Like I had a lot of friends who went down there and volunteered after Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of friends who did that for like that was the spring break thing people did. When I was in college, like wow. went down to New Orleans nice. And like helped out. I did not go. I felt bad, but I was like, I don't have no money just to be going on these trips.
Well, when you do take your parents down there eventually, you got to go to Cafe Du Monde and get some beignets. That's the place where you sit outside and there's like these little, they're called beignets. Oh. You see them in, what do you call that movie? Princess and the Frog. Like that's the thing she's serving all the time.
Also, everyone remember that Jonathan Braylock filmed an episode of
oh,
CSI
yes.
New Orleans.
That's right. Yeah.
So you got to spend, was yeah. it a week? Did you get to spend this week down there?
Like, I think it was like four days, maybe five.
My man got flown yeah. first class to New Orleans, baby.
But yeah, you got to go to Cafe Du Monde and you got to go to East Bayou. It's just a really, you know, just some sightseeing.
What are you looking at?
Yeah, what did you, like, you just locked, you just like stared dead-eyed at something off.
No, I was just saying like, you know, you got to go to Cafe Du Monde, you know, they got the great beignets, and make just sure you stop by Eve's Bayou.
Don't say it again, not explain what like, you're talking about.
Yeah,
where are you looking?
I'm just imagining, no, it's just such a great place, you know, I was just like picturing in my mind's eye.
Do you say a thing and don't want to see our reaction to it? Is that why you do it? Is that why? Because I've been noticing he will say a thing and it will just like look off. Like we're not, one, like we're not waiting for it. And two.
You know it's a great place to look? East
no,
by.
No, no, I don't want to, no. We don't want to.
Okay, let's start the show.
Jonathan Braylock, James the Third, Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
You know what it is.
Black men can jump.
Black actors, all right.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
Bad girl.
Ugh.
Bad girl.
Ugh, that's the one you picked?
I honestly couldn't think of a single line. The whole cold open, I was going, what is my line?
That was scary.
Wow.
And then at the last minute, I remembered that terrifying part of the movie. That was the scary part. I know people said this movie was scary. That was the scary part.
That was a scary.
I mean, it was. You're right. I mean, honestly, you know, Journey crushed it. So, you know.
Yeah. So, for those of you who are listening to us for the first time, you should know that these melodic tones your earbuds, Jonathan Braylock.
Oh. If y'all can see the way he just he was squirting from like, side to side. He was
moving around the whole time. It was uncomfortable.
For everyone at home, this cool. I can't do it. I can't. I try. It doesn't. I break too easy. This is Gerard Milligan.
And for everybody at home listening to these sounds.
We got a pimp on the podcast.
It's James the Third.
We are a film review podcast. We do review films of leading Black actors. We talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And today we are reviewing the 1990, is it six or seven?
97.
It is seven, awesome. Right? Yeah, 1997 film, Eve's Bayou. This stars Journey Smollett. Megan Good, Samuel Jackson, and then let me see some of these other ladies. Lisa Nicole Carson, Lynn Whitfield, Debbie Morgan. This film is also directed by a Black woman.
And written by her.
Lemons. And written by her. Casey Lemons. And did you say you had some, you had a little something to talk? Was this the person you're talking about?
So basically, what is very cool, what I peeped is, like, later on we'll get to it. There was an episode, I think episode 8 or 9 of Lovecraft Country, and Journey Smollett's character wears the same shirt that her mom wears in a scene in this movie. And again, it's not a big deal. It's just that, like, if you watch this movie and you see her outfit, it's like, oh shit, they paid homage to, like, the mom. It was like, it's just a very cool. Gotcha. Thing. Also, the thing I love about the director, Casey?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, the thing that's cool about her is that I love that she was an actress and then, you know, got to write and direct this movie. And this movie is in the National Film Reserve, I believe. I think I got inducted because it does talk about race in a really cool way that isn't, like, Black people being oppressed by white folks. So I thought that was a very cool thing, and I'm really happy it's in there. So it's in there with, you know, Do the Right Thing. You know, I think Black Panther's in there now. So,
yeah, I think it's fair to say this film is pretty legendary. Now, when it came out, it only made $14 million in the box office, but very popular with critics, 82%. On Rotten
Tomatoes.
It was
only 4.
90%.
The budget
audience.
Was only 4.
Yeah, the budget so was only 4. Mil. So it did it did well. Yeah, it made money.
Wait, did this get
sure.
any Oscar love? Why you laugh? That was like a real.
No.
What are you talking?
Wait,
are you kidding?
No, that was wait, that was real.
That you, wasn't for no. the film. That wasn't for the film. It was just for the, like, you think the Oscars are looking at.
This movie was black, so black, first black. Off, come on. This is a movie I feel. You know what? You're right.
You right? Damn. Oh wait, hold up. You know what? I'm tripping.
Because in all honesty,
like I forgot we've been doing this podcast for the last 5 years,
right. And because I literally was gonna say my next words were, but The Color Purple, and I was like, a white dude directed that.
Yeah. It was nominated for 7 NAACP awards. It won a Chicago. Debbie Morgan won Best Supporting Actress from Chicago Film Critics Award. Broadcast Film Critics gave Journey Best Child Performance. It won like some, you know, what do you call these awards? Like indie awards.
Yeah, she like
know?
Journey won a Critics Choice. But like it's but come all right. I know we're not supposed to like harp on the Oscars, but like come on, man. Like this movie was well shot. This movie, like the kid acting in this movie
this movie was very well shot. This movie, the acting in this film, it is like, insane. It's off the chain. Journey.
Oh my god!
Yeah, is Journey is so good.
Good. It's truly like it's one of those things where you're watching it and you're like, okay, I know Journey is a good actress. You know what I mean? Like, I know she's very good. So at times I like forgot. I forgot about the fact that she was such a small child.
Yeah,
like, yes, she was on The Cosby Show, but it was just like, you're like watching this and you're just like, you're like, yeah, that's Journey. She's really good. And then I kept watching. I'm like, but she's the lead of this movie. And she's acting up against like very good actors. Like, she's, you know, in scenes with Tabby Morgan and Lynn Whitfield and Samuel L. Jackson. These are very good actors at the top of their game in a major motion picture in 97. And she's crushing.
I mean, not only that, but there are certain shots of her just like looking. And it's like, yo, this child is too good. Like, her, like the mischievous look, the I'm about to screw y'all over. Like, when she fucks with her brother at one point.
Nothing against other child actors, but there are some child actors who have gotten especially little white boys, have gotten way more praise for performances that are not as, I think, complex as Journey's performances in this movie.
No.
And that I remember there was some New York casting director thing that Kat went to, and he was talking about how like he remembered auditioning like Natalie Portman when she was young. And a thing that he said about it was like a lot of like actors that were child actors and transitioned are technically like were as good as they are now back then. Like, and you can like see and watching this, not remembering, like I had seen this as a kid, but watching this now being like, and knowing how she is now, like in Lovecraft and stuff, it was like, yeah, she's as technically good then as she is now, you know, like just with more emotional experience to, you know, to infuse into the work now. Like, she's great in this. I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, she's good. When you see Megan Good, and like, again, I knew this movie existed, but for instance, for me, like my first introduction to Megan Good was in like Cousin Skeeter and stuff like that. So like,
yeah,
Megan Good was the actress I've always had a crush on, but I've never like seen her. Like, she, Megan Good was
she's
in
like,
this.
What, like 14?
Yeah, like she was so good. She was emoting. And the thing is, like, I never, what it frustrates is that, yes, Journey is able to do Lovecraft Country right now. Like, you know, Misha Green had her on Underground. They both went over, did Lovecraft Country, which is great. Now Journey's getting a chance to do all these movies. Megan Good, of course, has had a career. But there's something that's very frustrating about the fact that they were so good and so young. And that, again, like Braylock was saying, like, if these are like two white boys, like their career would have been drastically different. It wouldn't have taken so long for them to come truly household names. Like, again, we've probably known Journey because we watched Full House, you know, because we're black and stuff like that. But like, I feel like for the most of the country, like this is the year you've heard of Journey because of what is it? Harley Quinn and now Lovecraft, where this girl's been around since she's been like 6 or 7. And I'm like, it wouldn't be what's that little boy name from The Room? That little boy in everything. That little boy is everywhere. I just, like, come on, man. I watched that little boy. He be in everything. I watched, what is it? The young girl from Stranger Things. She fucking Instagram be following her everywhere she goddamn go. And, like, it's instant when it's a little white kid.
I love her, though.
They're all, my point is that they're all
she
good.
She great, though.
They're all good, but the trajectory.
Yeah.
But the trajectory isn't the same. Like, we talked about this when we talked about Beast of No Nation.
My man from, I mean, who knows if it was a contract thing, but my man from Moonlight is in, my man from Beast is in Spider-Man Far From Homecoming, but he's not in Far From Home. They just didn't bring him back.
They brought like, all the other kids back.
They brought all the kids back except him. He was the only kid that didn't come. Even the kids with under fives came back and like did the news reports and stuff, and it was like they were just like, nah, but we can't get him back.
But that's frustrating. And again, like watching this movie, it was really cool because, you know, I'm gonna just admit it right now, I have a like watching Lovecraft, you know, I think I'm in love with Journey, you know, because I think, you know, we're destined in the future, you know, to be in love, you know. So watching the younger her act, I was like, I'm so mad for you. Even though you, it's frustrating because I understand, like I'm saying, like this person is now famous, but to have this movie come out in 1997 and not have her have whatever the next big thing was in 98, 99, 2000, the next movie I saw her in was fucking Roll Bounce.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or like, what was it? Or the Denzel, The Great Debaters. You know what I mean? I don't know. This shit is driving me crazy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this film though, because it is pretty incredible. Ease by you. Let's see. The only other thing, I guess the short little explanation is this is a movie set down, you know, not actually in New Orleans, but like, I guess like in Louisiana, right? Mm-hmm. Like in the bayou. You know, we have like, and they're kind of a Creole family. There's a little French spoken. And so you have these, Journey is one of three children, with Samuel Jackson and Lynn Whitfield's character. They're both, what is it? Batiste?
Jean-Claude Batiste.
Yes. And Samuel Jackson is the dad. He is a doctor. Very early on, we, you know, Journey kind of sees him caught in the act of infidelity, kind of has to keep that secret. And I don't know. It's like it's hard to describe the plot. It's kind of just that. It's just the unraveling of this family.
I mean, it opens heavy. Oh. It opens legit with the VO. Yeah. I killed my dad when I was 9. I was like, damn.
Yeah. Like,
that's what this movie's about. When I was 9? Oh my, because I had never seen it. Damn.
Yeah, and my memory of it was like, yeah, and then like halfway through she kills him, and then the second half is crazy, like it like goes insane. But fully misremembered what happened.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Nice. Nice.
Now, listen, guys. You know about BetterHelp because we've talked about it here on the show many times, but if you're new and you're like, what is BetterHelp? How's your social battery right now? Let's start with that question. Because I don't know about you, sometimes social gatherings, you know, they start picking up in the spring and the summertime. And it's a lot. It could be a lot to just have to socialize with people because, you know, we went through a pandemic. You know what I mean? We were indoors for a long time.
Yeah, mine is draining. I have trouble being around. I already had trouble being around people, but now, especially post pandemic, I'm your boy is struggling.
You know, I found a black male therapist from BetterHelp. Actually,
wow.
I truly enjoy him because look, it's been a rough year, not a rough 2024, but a full year that's only gotten like more stressful. So I'm like, it has been a lifesaver to actually have a person you seems helpful with actionable things. Also because you don't want to be, especially in a social setting, always complaining or like always downer in the corner. So I just avoid it for the most part.
Yeah. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I'm in therapy as well. Like it is great for me, and just like talking through issues that you can't always talk about with your friends. With BetterHelp, it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/jump today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/jump.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else. Like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or 5-star hotels for 2-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice.
you know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartless!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming May 23rd, only on Max. Subscription required.
So, you open Google Chrome on your phone, you're hunting for a super rare first edition vinyl of a band you're obsessed with, when you're supposed to be working. But this site you tapped on seems pretty shady. And Daryl from IT just jumped up from his desk. Oh no, he's coming your way. It's a good thing built-in malware protection keeps you safe and sound. Not from Daryl, though. Sorry. There's no place like Chrome. Download Google Chrome on your phone.
Do we want to talk about initial thoughts?
Yeah, I'll go. I had never seen this movie. I remember, you know, my auntie's watching it, but they kicked all the kids out. And I just have never seen it. I've never seen like a rerun on like BET or nothing like that. But I kind of knew what it was about. I really, really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was shot beautifully. It is very frustrating. I need to stop comparing things to the Oscars, but this just feels like an Oscar-worthy movie. It's like, it was shot well. The cinematography was great. The music, the direction, like the acting from everybody. Like, I mean, Sam Jackson, who was barely in the movie, like he was almost too slick that you couldn't trust him. You know what I mean? Like Megan Good was, again, I don't have siblings, but Megan Good, like her relationship with him felt uncomfortable from the very beginning. Like I was like, oh, so this is probably like, I just thought it was really cool. I thought, you know, again, like I said at the top, I do have this fascination with like voodoo and like things of that nature. So to see it and not see it be like, I guess they did, but like to see it, like, I'm not about to put a spell on you. And like, there was no voodoo dolls. And even like the quote unquote witch definitely goes, what voodoo doll? Like she literally addresses why they ain't doing no goddamn voodoo dolls. You know what I mean? So I thought that was very, very smart. I'm a fan. I really like this movie. Should have got an Oscar nom, but we got nominated in 98. Let me look this
shit up. Don't look it up.
I'm going to look it up.
You're not going to feel good.
Best picture.
I'll go. This is probably my second time seeing it all the way through. But this was also one of those, like, I've talked about, only a couple of these have come up on the podcast, but this was one of those, like, when it came on like HBO or Showtime or whatever, this was one of those, like, ooh, am I going to get to see a sex scene movies that I would like flip around to? And like, it's so funny to watch it now as an adult, cause it was like just them rubbing against each other.
That's what a kid even,
but as a kid, I was like,
hilarious.
the acting is just fantastic. I was so uneasy. Well, like Samuel Jackson made me so uncomfortable. Like he was so charming and so like, and also like you were like, but he's sleeping around with people, so like he's sleazy and like maybe there's bigger things going on behind closed doors, and like, but then in the scene when he gets shot, it's like, oh no,
shot was so cool.
Like you don't want him to die, even though you're like, even though you feel like maybe he molested his daughter and like, all like there's all this stuff, but his something about his behavior, his portrayal of that is so powerful. All of the women in this were fantastic, and like, and to that same end, like we're complaining about, and all these women have careers, but you know, it's like they should all be bigger than they are. Every single one of them. Like they should all have all of the money in the world. They should be in every movie that gets made. And it's really a shame that a movie this well made came out in 98, and like, and yeah, and great that it's in the film registry, because it should be. You know, but it should be like everybody should know this movie and should be talking about this movie.
Yeah. This film is incredible. This is one of those films that you watch and you go, okay, so we can do this, you know?
Yeah.
Like
we've been doing this.
You know, it's like 100% has the capability to create an incredible like this film is 100% better than a lot of the Oscar nominated movies that not just came out that year but just in that decade, you know what I mean? And again, you know, it's not like to take away from other things, it's just to go, this is the exact type of movie, you know, that awards films the award seasons look for. They're looking for films that touch on these uncomfortable topics, that are beautifully shot, that are incredibly well acted, you know, that have like this sense of, it's such a filmmaker's film too, because like I can imagine like sitting in the theater, like it's like the score for this movie is incredible, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, just like you're like kind of listening to it, you're like drawn in, you're kind of, you're just like, what's going on? There are so many times in this movie where I laughed and it was like somewhat uncomfortable laughs, but I also feel like the way that it was edited and shot was like it was supposed to be like shocking, you know what I mean, like you know, there's a quick, not to spoil too much, but there's like this quick cut. They see this boy dead, and then it quickly cuts to them like cheering, yes. Like all the little kids being like, "Yeah, yes.
Yeah!"
And you're just like, "Whoa!" Like it's, that's hilarious. Like, and it's so disturbing. Like the juxtaposition of that was so disturbing. But yeah, like it's so frustrating to know. One, how hard Casey had to fight to even get this made. Mm-hmm. Apparently, she needed, you know, one of the main reasons it got made was because of Samuel Jackson, just like bringing his star power to it.
Wow.
Because, you know, he was kind of a big star at the time. I mean, still is, obviously. And, but even so, like, and she was an actress like that people knew, but it you know, but this was her, you know, first film she got to direct. And then, like, the next, like, you know, film that she gets to direct, like, that people actually know, you know, is Talk to Me, which came out.
Wow.
Let's see, how many years
was
later?
That 20,
like, so she directed five, some film. Like
2010, 26? 2007. Damn.
Oh, my God, 2007? 10 years later?
Yeah, like, so, like, according to IMDb, she directed one film, you know, in between, which is called The Caveman's Valentine. But, like, I'm just looking at it, it's like some, you know, crime film. Like, Samuel Jackson's also in it, but it's just like, you know, I don't know. It just looks like a movie that, like, didn't ever think it was going to do well. And, you know, it's kind of just like, yeah, you can do a thriller again, I guess, you know, Samuel Jackson's going to be in it. Fine. We'll make it. But like, yeah, it's so frustrating because it's so good. And it made $14 million off of $4 million, meaning it was profitable. And I'm sure they didn't like give it the time of day in terms of advertising and stuff like that. So it's frustrating, but I really think everyone should see it. If you haven't seen it, please, I would watch it before listening to this.
So honestly. Hollywood yeah. is telling me The Full Monty is better than Ease by You. Do y'all niggas remember The Full Monty?
I don't even think that's what they're saying.
No.
That's not what an Oscar.
No, James. Okay.
All right.
Best picture means these are the best movies that came out in a year. So you telling me a movie with these old ass British dudes stripping?
No, because what it means is like these are the people who we like, and these are the people who paid the most money, and these are the people who, I don't know, maybe a couple of us have had sex with, and that felt good. and also like these are the people who, like, maybe I did a line with them once. You know what I mean? Like that. I feel like it's that. You know, it's like, and then they're like, and let's give them a statue.
There is no fucking way. And I want to really preface this. There is, because again, this is the same shit that pissed me off about Selma. There was, bruh, I seen the full Monty. We don't study that shit in no film school. All right? Like, that shit ain't in, like, it ain't in
Big
the
Ass
British.
Rock is a funny song, though.
Is that movie in the fucking British Film Reserve or some shit? No. Is it an American one? No.
But this Big Ass Rock?
Oh, man. Okay, shall we get started? Yeah.
I love As Good As It Gets. I just watched it. Is it better than Ease By You? No. No. It's Jack Nicholson being a weird racist. I want to say this because I won't come at Jack. Jack Nicholson is my favorite actor of all time. But in As Good As It Gets, Jack Nicholson is a racist homophobe. All right? He won an Oscar. Everyone's like, this movie's fucking great. He kind of becomes a better person. Fucking Ease By You has performances from every one of his leads, and it teaches you about something you never heard of. Fucking As Good As It Gets is in New York. It's a racist, sexist dude. He's homophobic. He's mean as shit to animals. And it's like, that shit's supposed to be funny. And I love Jack Nicholson. You telling me these black people didn't deserve to get a nomination for teaching us about one fucking witchcraft? Talk about John Baptiste. I'm looking at Journey cry her little ass off. Sam Jackson with this wig. Come on. The wig alone,
I'm mad at more is just the lack of, like, you know, respect and opportunities that they got. They didn't, you know, they didn't get the opportunities that they should have gotten from this movie. People should have watched this movie and be like, this is incredible. Obviously, you can create films. Like, please make this movie. You know, what do you want to make next? Anyway, it seems like some of them are cashing in now. Like, it took 20 years, like literally 20 plus years for them to start getting, you know, like Casey Lemons, like, is directing way more now than she did then, you know, and it's because people were like, why was she never directing before?
You know what's happening? People are like, oh, snap, maybe we shouldn't just get this white dude this movie because he white. Let's find somebody who's been directing for 20 fucking years who did great movies and give them a quote-unquote shot.
Right.
A shot. Yo, the confidence of an average white dude. Like, I'm not talking about one who's exceptional. I'm talking about average. Like, the Mick G. I'm going to start naming directors that's going to burn my career.
You just said Mick G. Here are my things about Mick G, though.
All right.
I like those Charlie's Angels movies.
No, Bray. Come on. The thing is, those...
I like those Charlie's Angels movies, though.
Those movies are fun, but my point is that these people have a chance to just do whatever they want.
He did a fine job with Terminator 4. I mean, I hate Terminator 4, but he did a fine job. Like the look of Terminator 4 was okay, you know?
My point is, if a black woman had directed that movie and it would have got that much hate and have did that poorly, she would not direct again for 30 years.
No, you're right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, I'm not trying to come at him or Brett Ratner, you know? I'm just saying.
Don't act like Rush Hour wasn't fired up.
But what I'm saying is.
Don't act like Rush Hour wasn't fired up.
They get a chance to do whatever they want. And, like, that.
You know what's funny, though, too, to that same end? I know we're not talking about this movie, but when Brett Ratner directed Red Dragon, that sequel to Silence of the Lambs, on the entire DVD commentary is him talking about all the people he had to ask to help him do a scene. Like, it's like, oh, I wouldn't have been able to get through the scene if it wasn't for, you know, but it was like, but it didn't seem like he was just giving them credit. It seemed like he didn't know what to do. And like, it didn't sound like somebody being like, thank you for being there for me. It sounded like somebody being like, I was asked out if it wasn't for this.
Man, I'm tired, man. Like, And you know what? You guys are right. I shouldn't have looked at the Oscars. I shouldn't have. I need to stop putting so much weight on it. You're right. Because this shit just makes me mad. Like, why did it take Misha Green? Like, for real, for real. Let's talk about Journey.
We gotta talk about this movie.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
You're right. No,
okay.
Yeah.
Let me say.
Let's celebrate this movie for a second.
All right. You're right. Let me not trash Hollywood for being trash to black people.
All right. We trashed them. Okay.
No, not enough.
This... I Wait, can you guys talk about the opening monologue for this movie? Because I like kind of heard it, but it was so low on my thing, and then we eventually put on subtitles.
Well, it was quick. Like, was it? It wasn't like a full. It wasn't like a full monologue, right? It was like, no,
she said the history. She said the history of we're on this land, named after a nurse that saved. I don't know if John Baptiste was a Confederate or a Union worker, but like, it was a former slave who saved a general or something like that. He freed her, and then as a reward or some shit, she bore him like 16 babies or some bullshit. Like, that's okay, reward. And they are descendants of John Baptiste. And then, you know, she was 9 when she killed her dad. That's how we got into it.
Right. And then we open on like a party. And, you know, it's like, it's cool. I mean, it's just amazing to see. And you have to really think about this in the 90s too. The 90s, which is an era where... hood films are kind of like the films that that Hollywood has allowed black people to make. They don't really let them make films like this, where you have a middle class, upper middle class black family, you know, other upper middle class, you know, black families. They're like partying in a house. They're just drinking. You know, it's like not quite Great Gatsby, but it's like, you know, this feeling of just like, yeah, they're just like, these are just people partying. We see the children playing, you know, Journey loves playing pranks on her little brother. They're like running around the house. There's a, you know, man dancing with his wife, getting nice and frisky. Always a little weird when you have that, the one, you know, one couple at the barbecue just being like, what are you... Yeah, like they're children around.
Just hands on the ass. Just hands.
Yo, my man was just directly in it. I was like, good God, brother.
What'd the woman say if she don't get her ass out of my face? And then they took away the subtitles for whatever the insult was. They were like, we'll give you the subtitles for the first half. But then they took them away for whatever she was saying she was going to do if she didn't do it. Oh, that was great.
Oh, man, I thought it was awesome.
And then... but then at some point Journey gets you know, her character gets upset. What's her character's
Eve.
Name?
I gotta
Eve, obviously.
Because it's her bayou.
It's not her bayou. She's it's named bayou. After Eve's bayou.
No, it's her the bayou her, belongs to her. That's her what bayou. They that was another thing they said in the opening monologue. Oh, you just missed it. They named the bayou after her. Yeah.
Okay. But Eve gets upset because her dad isn't or her dad, we don't kind of learn this later. We actually don't really, fully get it at the time, other than somebody was like, why aren't you dancing? She's like, I can't dance. And then she runs away and she runs into like a shed and then she falls asleep. And then when she's woken up by her dad having sex with another man's wife.
Uh-oh. Beginning of the movie. Just rubbing up against each other. But to a kid, I was like,
yeah, that's okay. Definitely sex as a kid. Yep. I mean, you know, that was, yeah.
I think it might have been sex too. We don't know. Yeah, I mean
what
she says. Right, right.
For all the kids that listen to the podcast going, but what softcore can I?
Okay.
Jace.
Wow.
Anyway, I was trying to be authentic to my experience.
I agree. I agree with you, Jace. But no, but when Journey sees this, she doesn't even scream. That's like that kid scream where like you're in trouble and you're like you lose all the air in your body.
But this was the moment when I was like, that's the same shit. Like what she did right there felt like episode 3 of Lovecraft when I won't say any spoilers, but episode 3 when it's like all on her dealing with her house. I was like, this is the same shit. Like, she's so... she was capable of so much back then. Like, it's so wild.
It's crazy. And she... And you know, Samuel Jackson's like, oh, hey, honey, remember, you know her, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, you scared us. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for scaring you. I'm sorry. Like, her immediately apologizing, I was like, oh, man, this is so... this is what women have to deal with. Like, it's just such a sad thing of just like women apologizing because a man did something horrible, yes. And then just like, I'm sorry, and you're just like, oh my god, this little girl clearly freaked out, goes in, tells her older sister about it, what she saw, and of course her older sister, played by Megan Good, is just like, no, you didn't see that,
and then walks her through a whole nother scenario.
Now this was incredible filmmaking.
It was really great.
She literally is like, that's not what you saw. What you saw was this, and then they replay the kind of scene with Megan Good right by her sister's side, hand on her shoulder, and they're like watching it happen the way that she's describing it. Like, this is what you saw.
Yeah, and all of the things that happen, like they still knock over the bottle. Yeah. Like all of the all the beats happen. But it's just kinder and like it through a glassy eyed, like.
But also the directing, and Bray, I think you might have been hitting at this. The directing, her directing was so good, and she has a couple scenes that I thought were just like fantastic, which I personally don't know how she did, and I'm very curious. Like her blending of the bedroom and this flashback was so good, because how we get to this flashback is we kind of like just slightly go in on Megan and journey a little bit. Now we're back in the boat room. We've moved the camera. Now they're standing there, but as it moves a little bit more, they're back in the bedroom as Megan is finishing, that's what you saw. And I'm like, this piece of filmmaking is so good and was so smooth. And she does it again later on when like the aunt is talking about her husband who was murdered in the mirror. And I'm like, this shit is so, like, she's so crafted. And I'm like, the fact that this woman didn't direct again for another 10 years, I'm just like, how? So good. So good. I, like, honestly, so fascinated by her.
Yeah.
And Megan was great. Megan was great.
Yeah. There's also just, like, so this whole entire film, here's how you know the directing was great. Because the performances match the camera movements, matches the cinematography and the color, you know, kind of correction, and it matches the editing, and it matches the score. Like everything is like, feels somewhat like a dream. There's like this kind of thing about this movie of just like your memory is, you know,
yeah
it's very malleable, because it's just like there are things that we remember, we forget, like we want to forget, you know, things that, you know, it's like your mind protects you at times.
When your memory gets influenced by like just someone else saying something, it makes you question it a little bit. Like, wait, really?
Yeah. And even the way that the script is written, or at least how it comes out, is like, you don't fully understand. There are some details that we're saying that you don't actually even get fully until a little bit later on. They put things in, they cement things like later. They're like, no, this is like, it's not like 100% like, oh, these are the three kids and that's this person, this, that person. You kind of like, you learn, like as you keep watching, you're like, okay, yeah, that is this, that is that, you know. But they one of the best moments of this, I don't know how much this is skipping ahead, is with the sister, Samuel Jackson's sister, so like Eve's aunt, when you find out that like three of her husbands have died.
Oh man.
Like, yes. The way that you find that out, like, I forget, she just says something and she's just like, oh, and she like, you know, it always happens. And she puts like a picture up against the other two pictures and you're like, wait a minute, yes. What?
Three die, yeah, in tragic ways?
Yeah. And this was another example of that, like, you know, memory layered on top of another memory, like where they like pan out and she's like trying to tell the story and they pan out and there's, oh, in the God, mirror, there's just three men staring in the mirror that like, you know, like it's really
that whole
powerful.
Scene was so beautiful because she also admits, how we get into it is like her and, because, you know, basically, you know, skipping ahead is like, you know, in that scene, Eve tells her that, you know, she saw her dad. She basically saying her dad cheats. She's like, you know, me and your dad are similar. It's just that I didn't have kids to catch me. And then she goes into how the husband who loved her the most died, and then she confesses that he was killed by a lover. And I mean, just seeing her go to the mirror, seeing the actions play out, I was like, oh shit, are we doing this? Lighting is still the same. Seeing Journey walk up, and I'm like, okay, cool, they're probably behind her. I was like, so we're gonna just see this play out because the dudes are probably just behind them. But when she like walks through the glass into the scene, I'm like, yo, this is great. And then she just turns back around and like Eve is there. I was like, this honestly, I was like, filmmaking wise, this is great. And also it was such an interesting way to have this flashback without doing a traditional flashback. It's like, it's still in real time, if you will. So we don't lose sight of the characters. Right. I thought that was so smart. God.
Yeah. And the Lynn Whitfield in this, like, look, they are beautiful. Like, beautiful. So like at some point Eve's like, oh, but like mama, like, you know, mama's the most, you know, beautiful woman in the world. They like say that, like the Samuel Jackson says that, Megan Good says that, you know what I mean? Like they're like repeating these things, and she is like, she's striking, she's beautiful, but there's something about her that feels uneasy. You don't know, like in the beginning, you're not sure if it's her. You're not sure if it's, you know, what she's experiencing. There's just this, you're like, what's yeah. going on? Like, why is everyone so like, feels so weird? And then when the sister is like doing all of her readings, you know, and you're like, okay, so there's some like weird, you know, voodoo kind of magic happening in this house. Man, that was, yeah. Even, I don't know.
She called it counseling.
And then this run of scenes
was all great.
She called
it counseling.
Yeah.
She's a counselor. Yeah. So it wasn't voodoo, she was counseling.
And they're like, we hear them say like, we just let her do that because we know she's crazy. Like,
well, I thought something, I mean, even what you're saying, the mom, it was so interesting because she almost was like a Stepford wife where she was so pretty. She was still smiling, but you could see behind her eyes, she was cracking. And I thought that was such, because I feel like a performance like that will get looked over because, you know, she's not chewing up scenery. But like, you can see the pain in this woman in almost every scene. Knowing that, you know, the moment she came out at the beginning is like, what's wrong with her? You know, the fact that Sam Jackson was talking to the door, like, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with you? Like, she says it. And like, we all know some shit went down, and she knows. I don't know, man. I thought that she was fantastic. I mean, the aunt was by far my favorite character, I think, of the whole thing. Because she was going through so much. Yo, I'm not going to compare her to whoever else nominated for Best Supporting Actress. So let me not that year. but I will say also the thing.
Man, fuck a Meryl Streep. Whoever it is.
You know, Meryl Streep ain't getting nominated for no Best Supporting, brother. Come on, stop it now. You know, she was
you said supporting. Now, okay,
brother.
Right.
But I think there is something to just watching Journey go through. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like this character went through so much, you know, from the mom being spooked and kind of locking everybody in the house. I thought she played a child so well, which I think is really hard for kid actors because she was acting for so long. Like, when they get locked in the house and she gets bored, she's literally on her bed. She's bored. She jumps up, goes to Megan Good's room, and, like, she looks at the door. In and out of nowhere, just gets mad energy and just starts banging on the door. What are you doing in there? Or the bathroom door, just starts banging on the door. And then that's not enough. So she goes, looks in there, gets the little fake snake, looks at it, smiles, and takes her brother's glasses and puts the snake there. And then it's like, it's just a nice evil smirk. And then she just goes downstairs. And we're like, we're just waiting for her to scream. I hate her. I hate her. I thought it was so good.
Yeah, because what else? I mean, what are they supposed to do? They've been like sitting inside for who knows how long.
Honestly, it's messed up. It is messed up. That's the thing. You're like watching. You're like, it is messed up to keep your kids inside because like some, you know, fortune teller.
And it's why they would like.
And it's not even what the fortune teller. It's not even like the fortune teller was like, you got to keep your kids inside. The fortune teller just said, look to your kids. And then also the other, you know, her sister-in-law saw some kid getting hit by a car, but didn't even know what kid.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, you're staying inside the whole summer. Oh, when that happened though, I screamed to Tessa. I was like, this is us. We're in COVID.
Are you serious?
Stay inside.
Are you serious?
And I feel, but I feel like Look to Your Kids, right? Is like your kids, there are things going on with your kids. Like one of them knows about your husband's infidelity. The other one is confused about her relationship with her father. Like, look to your kids, like pay attention to them. But,
right.
But instead it's like she like holds them captive, which is why they would cheer when a kid is dead, because they can finally go outside. Like that scene is so unnerving when they're like cheering.
And the mom was like, don't be happy if someone lost their kid. But it's so funny, James, you hinted on something. Again, this isn't a spoiler, but I listened to the Lovecraft Country podcast, and it's an episode where I think it talks about something like this, where it's like, I feel like oftentimes Black women, especially Black girls, get left out of so many conversations. Like, you know, we often talk about how often Black men and young Black boys get, you know, killed and assaulted by the police, but there's so many videos and footage where it happens to Black women. I mean, from cops dragging Black girls out of pools and shit like that. And, you know, on this particular episode of the show, they talk about Black elders, you know, and how Black elders will discuss a Black girl and how to protect her and what is right for her and what she should do. But then they will talk about her, but not talk to her or actually listen. So then whatever is happening to her continues to happen until it becomes something that's so big that it has to be addressed, where it's like brushed in front of their eyes. And that's kind of what happens throughout this entire movie. It's like, I mean, even it happens with Sister and Sister, like Megan Good silences, you know, Journey for an example, you know? And then at one point, people are just ignoring Megan Good throughout the whole thing, who's going through some crazy shit, until an instance of a sister on sister, like a moment, which I didn't realize was from this movie, just like that moment of Megan Good in the car and puts her finger up like, shh, and looking at Journey, and all of a sudden the aunt knows exactly what went down. Like the aunt knows, and it's like one of those things that was behind, under her nose the whole time, but she just didn't look or listen because, you know, I feel like sometimes as adults, you get lost in your own shit that you don't listen to what this kid is telling you until you have to. And by that point, their life has been altered in a way that, you know, can never be changed again.
Yeah.
I think that's
it's irreparable. Yeah.
I don't know. It was, that sucks, man. And the thing about it is because Sam dies, it never is fully addressed. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe that's the point. Maybe the.
I think that is the point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, so, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's so interesting because you have, you know, the sister-in-law's kind of character, which is, her storyline is kind of separate. I guess that's like the B storyline in the film where, you know, while, the mom, like, Eve's mom is told to look to her kids, and she interprets that as, oh, something's gonna happen. The sister-in-law is told, you know, you're a curse,
yes,
and every man you marry is gonna die. and she's like, you know, she screams at her, she runs away, but she's like feeling it. And then later on, we get this, you know, random dude who kind of comes to her door, who also is, you're like, just like, who is this guy? He's like, kind of like, you know, he just, it just, because it's raining, it's just, I love the line where he's like, am I disturbing you? And she's like, I don't know yet.
Yes. He got the long hair. I was like, what is this?
The long hair. And he's looking for his wife. She sees that his wife is cheating on him.
Yeah.
So she tells him that. And then they fall in love, or at least into passionate lovemaking. And, you know, and there's this monologue. Oh, sorry. There's this monologue that she gives when she's talking to Journey. All right. This is a bit of it. She said, last night I had a dream that I was flying. It was such a fine feeling, but in the corner of my eye, I saw a woman drowning in the very same air that was keeping me afloat. And I knew without looking that it was me. Should I save her? Then I heard Lewis's voice saying, don't look back. So I kept on flying and I let her drown. When I woke up, I told Julian I would marry him. He wouldn't have it any other way. Maybe God will be kind and allow me to go with him. I'm so tired of being left alone.
Man.
And I was just like, oh my God.
Man.
First of all, that's obviously, that's poetry. But it's also just like, you know, speaking so much, you know, to this experience that I'm sure many other women have felt, of just like feeling left, you know what I mean, alone. And whether it is like, so she's specifically this widow, like three-time widow, which I can't even imagine what that's like. But the thing is, like, yes, there's this woman who's telling her she's cursed, she's a witch, but I feel like society places so much blame on women for whatever is happening with men. Like, when you like look and see this other stuff, you know, I feel like we don't fully understand what happened to Harry. Was the last one who died, but he was drunk, and it seems like it was a car accident.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I think. I think Eve saw that. She saw him die in the car crash.
She saw it in her, vision.
So he's drunk all the time. If he's drunk driving, like, that's not her fault, you know?
Right. Oh, but like, he wasn't driving that night. He was being
that night.
He was,
I know,
being driven.
He was being driven. Yeah. Anyway.
But it also, I guess, could have happened not at that night. Like, it could have happened at a different
time.
That's
what I meant. We didn't fully understand it. Did we learn how the first husband died?
The army one? No, I just saw him in an army suit. I forget, like.
Right. Maybe he died at war.
I mean, the death that her husband was killed in front of her by a lover.
That was another. That moment also scared me. The gunshot. I wasn't ready for it. I mean, I knew it was going to happen, but I wasn't ready for it. It made me jump.
Right. I was like, I didn't know if he was going to die in that instance, but I was like, man, that is some traumatic stuff where, like, that guy you cheated with. Like, the guy you cheated. Whew. And just showed up at your house,
and then that is her justification for why she doesn't want Eve to tell anyone about what happened, because she's like, if you do, then your dad's gonna die. Like, she's essentially saying, like, if you tell someone, your dad's gonna
die. That's what happens, you know? Because
and that's exactly
because what is so fascinating about it is that, you know, once Eve hears about what happens to Megan Good's character, she like. Goes to the fortune teller, asks for a voodoo doll. She's like, I want to curse. I want him to die. So the woman does curse him, but just, I think that the interesting part is, and she kept making sure that she wants to do it, but I think Eve wanted to have the control of, like, putting him in pain, but not, like, just ending his life. And so the fact that she goes and runs directly, because even, I don't know how, we never know the distance of things, but I think people make sure to say, like, did you walk all the way here? Did you do all of this? Like, when Megan Good walked to get to her dad's office and walked to get her hair done. And then when Eve walked to the bar, it's like, yo, you came all the way here? That bar scene.
I got to say, when Megan Good left the house, defied her mom's orders, left the house, and then came down and saw that, like, she was like, oh, I went to the parlor, beauty parlor. I thought immediately, like, oh, look, she's like trying to look like her mom. It looked like that.
Yeah,
like, hair. Her hair was kind of done in a similar way, and I was like, oh, she's trying to, like, be like her mom. And I felt uneasy about that. I didn't, like, fully get, but I did feel uneasy about that. And, like, I mean, man, was that such heavy foreshadow. Oh, well, I guess it happened that night.
And the slap is so there's so much weight to it, because it's not just like, how dare you leave my house. It's like, that slap is like trying to knock sense into her to be like, don't lust after your father. Yeah. Like, that's what's behind that slap.
Yeah, and she also says at one point, you know, she blames me for pushing him away, you know, like. So everything that you realize Megan Good is doing is because, yeah, she has some attraction to her dad, but it's almost like, I'm trying to keep the household together. Like, she even says, after the fight, I went down and I tried to comfort him. And, like, both stories start the same way. They just shift a little bit. Like, she went down and massaged him. It was like, I want you to feel better. I know this is bad. And so that's scary. But then when Journey runs into the dad's friend who, what's his name? The guy she's cheating with. Lenny. When she runs into Lenny and she stops, and then she makes a decision that she's gonna tell him without telling him. Like, you see it on her face. Like, that acting was.
Yes.
She makes the decision to do it.
It was so good. Yo, when she said, when she was like, "Oh yeah, your wife doesn't seem like the lonely type. My dad isn't either. But my mom and you guys seem like the lonely type." And you're just like, what?
Yeah. She's like, oh, so you're never home. Yeah, my dad hasn't been home. Like, oh my gosh. And then when she walks away, she like smirks to herself. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. And then, and I just want to say too, like, I love the sort of the kind of commentary on mysticism and on you know, sort of like the unknown of how, you know, Eve kept trying to figure out how to enact justice on her father and wanted him dead and believes that she killed him, even though the woman was like, no, I didn't, you know, like, I'm not gonna curse him, I'm gonna just like, I'll protect your family against him, I'm not gonna curse, you know, but still the energy that she's putting forth towards that, you know, she puts the blame on herself that he was murdered, but also the woman was going around telling people that, you know, that he was sleeping around with her anyway, and then, you know, so it's like there's the energy that she put out into the world, and then also the facts that were put out into the world, and how, and she now also like puts that, you know, she believes that she's the cause of the death, even though,
well,
that
she
may
wanted
not be
him
true.
Dead.
Yeah.
She felt like she wanted him dead. She literally, you know, had a pretend voodoo doll that she was sticking pins into, and she like got a little bit of hair and gave it to the, you know, the woman, the voodoo doctor, and so she's putting that on herself. But yeah, you're right. Like, ultimately, it's his actions that caused his own death, you know. But
yeah,
it's so, and it's so crazy because it's like, then we get this scene, you know. Before this, we get, oh yeah, I don't know. Did we even really talk about what happened with her, with Samuel Jackson, Megan Good? Like, we get that yeah. scene.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
is Megan
oh,
Good's telling of it, of like, yeah, I was there, like, I went down, I wanted to comfort daddy, you know, she's like giving a massage, sits on her, they do like a little dad-daughter kiss, and then they're like really kissing. And she's like, yeah, he started really kissing me, and then I try to pull away, and he slapped me. And you're just
well,
like,
she,
oh
but
my God.
She also said, I pushed him, and I must have pushed him too hard. I must have hurt him. She goes, yeah. I must have hurt him because then he slapped
yes.
me. And it's like, oh, no, don't think that this is in any way you're doing. Like, oh,
right.
It was awful.
And that, I mean, like, how many stories, right? Like, how many times are women gaslit with this? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, but we're watching it. We're watching the, like, kind of the gaslighting. We're watching, we don't know. We're as the audience, we're looking at this and we're seeing this woman, like, doubt herself or blame herself. You know, we see Journey be so upset. And then we get to the end. And Journey's reading this letter, and we're seeing the story told again from a different version of the story, which is, no, Megan Good was the one who kissed him and was treating that, and Samuel Jackson was the one who tried to push away and then slapped her because he was just startled by what she was doing, you know, and felt bad about it and felt bad for slapping her and didn't know what to do. And both there, it's played, it's acted so well both times that both feel super realistic and believable. You know what I mean?
And also
like
shot
the slaps
like
feel realistic.
shot pretty much the same, like the same frames each time. So like it just feels like the same moment. Just the approach is different. It was amazing.
And then so you're like, oh wait, oh shoot. And so Journey feels bad about herself. She's like, why did you lie to me? And she goes to Megan Good. Megan Good starts crying, and she's like, you know, he wrote this. What's the truth? Tell me. And she says, I don't know. And you're like, like, oh my God.
Because she said, because at first she was
and we don't know.
Because at first it was like, you know, why'd you lie? Why'd you lie? Why'd you lie? And then she's like, I didn't lie. And like, what's the truth? And when she's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And then, you know, Eve, they hold hands. And my thought was like, oh yeah, she's looking into her mind's eye and seeing what happened. But we don't see it.
And, yeah, because they hold hands, right?
They hold hands.
And see it.
It's great.
I mean, it's great. And also, the reason he wrote that letter is because after that moment that his sister saw the aunt apparently approached him about it and accused him of doing something. Because he was like, basically, he wrote the letter to his sister being like, I don't know what have I done to make you believe I could do such a thing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man... Also, his death scene I thought was shot so well, like with the train coming, and then it almost like it was a dream, but then like him kind of falling, and you see him fall under the train, like under the train. It's like this is so well.
Every time, reality caught up with a vision, it was so well shot.
Yeah,
it was the sequences were always so well matched together and also blurred like Cub Ray was saying earlier so wonderfully.
I mean, you know, I finally come around to something James has been preaching about, you know, for years with this movie.
What something I said?
I don't believe in the Oscars anymore.
Oh, what?
I think there needs to be a time when people of color just do their own thing. And I thought about this a lot. Because, you know, the Oscars is doing a lot to be inclusive, forcing people's hand. But I'm like, if I have to force you to include me in something, that probably means you don't want me there or want people like me there. So why would I take the time to fix your broken system? Why not just take what we have, the people we have, and make our own things? Like, why do we not just... We can make an award show that not only has a best picture, but has a best comedy. You know, they can have a best dramatic actor, a best comedic actor. You know, we can have a show where, like, unlike the Emmys and unlike the Oscars, you know, trans actors can't get nominated. You know what I mean? Like, we could literally do the thing, but yet we keep depending on these white institutions to make us feel validated.
Say that, Gerard.
Are you talking about the BET Awards? Or?
Yeah, no, are you talking about the NAACP Awards? No, are you talking about any of these things that already exist?
No. I'm not, because the BET Awards is very particular to Black. And to me, I think there is something to people of color. There is something to Black people. There is something to like Indigenous people. There is something to Latinx people where like they are also not getting nominated for these awards.
Oh, you're talking about the BIPOC Awards.
Exactly.
You're talking about the BIPOC Awards? I just had to say both versions because I don't
know which one's right, but that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a award show that would award us, like straight up. It's like we don't have to sit here and talk about like One Day at a Time has been through four fucking networks and still has never gotten a comedic award on anything. And yet this show is so important to people that they have not been every time they cancel, they're somewhere else. They don't like CBS. But yeah, we don't award the actors on that show. We don't award the show. Come on, man. Why are we looking at white people? Literally, I'm looking at the year. Yes, Titanic was that year. Again, Jack Nicholson is my favorite actor. I love As Good As It Gets. The fuck the Full Monty, dog.
Damn.
Are you telling me these movies are better than this? What this Black woman has done? We talked about Selma. We talked about how fucking Ava didn't get credit for rewriting the script.
Listen, but Big Ass Rock is a good song. I ain't gonna let you. You can't be saying fuck the Full Monty the all full day. Monty, not in my presence.
The Full Monty is a fine movie, but it, again, there is something about us having to prove our worth to people who
wait.
Don't
is the movie the musical? From. I keep referencing the musical. I don't even
it's
know
not,
if the movie is
it's
the
not
musical.
A musical. It's not a musical, James.
Okay, well, I love that song from the musical. So
my point is that there has to be a time where we're like, yo, cool, like, do your thing. You know what I'm saying? And let us do our own thing. That's all I'm saying. Like, I feel the same way when it comes down to even our comedy institutions. Like, people trying to fix theaters that didn't put people of color on stage. Why am I trying to fix that shit? And they quit.
Don't just say theaters like you ain't talking about one specific.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they quit. And now it's a panel of people of color and black folk trying to fix
it. You're describing one place.
Well, the other one that was super racist is trying to sell the theater. Like, they're like, fuck it. We got too many problems. Let's just,
okay, you're
like,
talking about
why are we trying to fix things that white people fucked up and now are giving up on?
Because I think humans are like, we like, are creatures of habit. And so we have sort of been shown these systems that we think are the way to go and like are it. And so when a name becomes popular, like, a theater that will not be named or the Oscars, which I guess I'm just going to blatantly talk about again. You know, we think that, you know, that's the way to go. And then that's the be all end all. And that's the hype. So we continue to, you know, we try to fix those systems instead of like being like, you know what? Fuck the whole system. Like the whole system is burn it all down to the ground. Come up with a new system. That's better for everybody.
Start from the ground up, man. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I'm just like, I am now realizing, like, again, looking at this movie and looking at some art, and every time you hear about a female director or a black director that someone's taking a risk on after this person's made a movie that was profitable and had good reviews, damn, it's still damn. A risk.
Risk.
It's still a risk. Listening to Patty Jenkins talk about the level of stress she had to go through to get Wonder Woman and how much of a risk it was for her to direct that movie after she did Monster and it won her actress, her lead actor, an Academy Award, and it was still a risk. And I'm looking at, I'm gonna stop naming people, whatever. I'm not. I'm looking at Josh Trank, who did one movie and it bombed and he still gets more movies. He gets more movies. This woman had to do Wonder Woman, dog. Like, y'all understand. It is
she had to do Wonder Woman, and it had to be good.
It had to be.
she couldn't just do Wonder Woman. It had to be great. And it was.
Man. Lord have mercy. I don't burn my bridges in Hollywood, so.
I don't do bits anymore.
And John is quiet. John's like, I ain't doing it.
I don't do bits anymore. That's not a thing that I don't partake in bits at all. You know, because y'all know me, because I'm like, I'm a bitless dude, you know? I'm a dude that don't do no bits no more, you know?
Why are you doing
Because, like, you know, started from the bits, now I'm here. Started from the bits. Right,
well, okay.
Now I'm here.
Okay.
You know what I
mean? Okay. No,
what you,
I don't.
What you mean what? Started from the bits, you know? Now,
all right,
now
it's time for the cause.
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons toward your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Because shopping at Kroger, whether in-store or online, is easy. And saving money is even easier with the Kroger app. So get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.
Hey, this is Tim Heidecker, and I'm glad to be back in Glendale, California, in the studio with my good friends DJ Doug Pound and Vic Berger for another episode of our podcast, Office Hours Live. This week, we had a very special guest, Hiss Golden Messenger, who played a beautiful tune for us. We laughed, we had fun, and you should tune in to Office Hours Live this week, and quite frankly, every week on your podcast app of choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live.
It's time for the cause. We rate and review films not based on how much we like them, but whether or not they help the cause of more leading black actors in Hollywood. So if we feel that a film fully helps the cause, we give it a black fist. Somewhat helped the cause, a white palm. Didn't help the cause at all. We don't get anything. Count of three. Going to rate this movie. 3, 2, 1.
Oh!
Three black fists.
Hold up. Wait, nope. I got my feet up in the air, too, though.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm trying to get.
Well, that's not the ratings.
So. Nope.
That's not a thing, James.
Yeah. I'm doing it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's not the rating, though.
That's not how this works.
They need Eve's bio needs to know that I'm putting all the just all the appendages.
All right. Well.
All right, James. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I gave it a black fist because obviously every single actor in this movie is incredible. Journey's crushing it right now. I mean, yeah. Like Casey got to direct Harriet. I think directed a couple of. She directed some of the she has her own miniseries coming out soon. All right, that's about it, you know.
Okay.
I gave it a fist because I again really enjoy this movie. I think it's so well shot, so good. I think the fact that this movie exists, and maybe at the time it made some money, but it wasn't fully given the credit it deserved, like with awards and things like that. But the fact that it's in the National Film Reserve, I think that is very important to show, like, this movie is impactful and will continue to be so. So I'm here for it. Love it. Love it.
All right. I guess James already said his thing.
I already said it.
You put your feet. Yep.
Pulled his foot up.
You put your feet in there.
Like, what more is there to say? I mean,
Yeah, you guys should really watch this movie. It's really good.
Please, it's so good.
Oh, I was just going to do our, little tags, social media. You can follow us at Black Man Podcast. BlackManPodcast.com is our website. Get links to our merch, our Patreon, which we don't do new episodes on anymore. But if you want to listen to the 1 year's worth of episodes we put on there, you
can. If you want us to do Lovecraft Country.
That's true.
Tweet at us, ask it, because then we can talk
people
about it.
A lot of people did want us to do Lovecraft Country.
Now they're done.
Oh, really?
Now yeah, the Lovecraft podcast is enough.
We talked about possibly.
The actual Lovecraft podcast, they're like, we're good. We don't need to hear
it. We could have done it, but,
we don't need to hear the next time.
I will say, you have a Forever Dog Plus.
Yes.
If you want to listen to this podcast and other great Forever Dog podcasts with no ads, you can do that.
Hold up, no ads?
No.
Yeah, man, no ads. I know.
I'm getting that.
And if you rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes, we'll read your review on the air. This is by Dev90. I agree with Dulce. Just finished listening to the review of Like a Boss with guest Dulce Sloan, and though I hadn't seen the movie, I thoroughly enjoy the episode. Dulce is hilarious, and as always, the guys bring a smart, funny, and insightful take on the films they review. I've been listening to the pod for a few years now, and I love it. It's become a highlight of my week, and I also really, really appreciate the mental health check-ins that the guys have been doing this year. As we all know, 2020 has been trash, and I've truly appreciated getting to know the guys a little better through those check-ins.
Thank you.
Glad to hear Gerard is doing better mentally. Love you guys and the pod. P.S. I 1,000% agree with Dulce that Astronomy Club being canceled is a travesty. And James, Cat Williams' skit is iconic.
Thank you.
P.P.S. Would love for you guys to review Just Mercy, Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx film. It's a timely movie with great performances, and it's now available on HBO Max, I believe.
Oh, did we not do that? Have we not done that?
No, we haven't done it.
Yeah, we got to do that.
We do.
Wow.
All right.
I thought we did that one. That's crazy.
thank you, guys.
Because we almost did it, and then we did the banker instead.
Gotcha.
And then this is by Nothing Else Anthony. Favorite podcast? I love this podcast. Just had to get that in because it was such a nice, short and sweet review.
Hell yeah.
Love it. Thank you.
Hell yeah. Thank you, guys. Thank you for listening.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. You can follow me at John Braylock.
You can follow me at James Third Comedy, jamesthirdcomedy.com. Third is 3RD.
Lord have mercy. You can follow me at Gerard Milligan. Oh, and this is not, I have no affiliation with this, but I think if you are a horror fan, there's a documentary on Amazon called Black Noir, and it's just a history of Black people in horror, and it's just really, really good. It's a lot of famous actors and creators in it. It's such a good think piece. I heard about it after listening to the Lovecraft Country podcast. You should watch it. You got Amazon, baby. It's good.
We'll see you next week. Peace.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all of the latest Forever Dog news.
What's up, Black Men Can't Jump comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!